From the shores of Puget Sound, this is Healthy Homecast. Healthy Homecast is created and operated by Healthy Painting and HealthyPainting.com. Healthy Homecast is your source for information, news, and events that focus on environmental responsibility, environmental consciousness, and eco-related products and practices. Find us on the web at www.healthyhomecast.com. And now your host, Daryl Whalen.
Okay, good evening and welcome to Healthy Homecast. This is episode 6, correct? Yeah, we're still waiting for our clapping machine. But anyhow, that's so sweet. So you've got Tony Freis and myself, Daryl Whalen, here with Casey Coulomb. Did I get that right?
You did, Daryl.
Who's the team coordinator and supervisor for ClearCore, part of the American Lung Association. And we've got a lot of great stuff to hear about, and I'm really looking forward to it myself. And but before we get to any of that, let's hear some news with Tony. Take it away, Tony. It's time for some healthy news, information, and events that are happening throughout the Puget Sound area. Sponsored by PigeonPointPC.com.
Alrighty, and welcome to the news. First up is the Washington Toxic Coalition's 2011 auction and celebration. Spring ahead with the WTC for their annual auction and celebration. And this year they have more reasons to celebrate. It's their 30th anniversary. This is taking place Saturday, June 18th from 4 o'clock to 7:30 p.m. at the Mountaineers Club at 770 Sandpoint Way Northeast, Seattle, Washington. For more information, visit www.wahtoxics.org. Next up is Cascade Bicycle Club's Ancient Secrets of Bicycle Maintenance Fix-A-Flat class. This is a need-to-know skill for any cyclist. Gain confidence needed to deal with unexpected flats on any ride. Class is hands-on, so dress to get dirty. Bring your bike to class. This is for ages 16 and up and takes place Wednesday, May 11th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Eagle Landing. There is a $40 registration fee. For more information, check out www.burianparks.net or call 206-988-3700. Next on the list is PugetSound.org's Waterbird Survey. Learn about different water birds that currently use the Tilto Lagoon, a degraded estuary within a park, and how the water bird community is expected to change in the future as a result of estuarine restoration plans. This is a free family-friendly event. Make sure to wear sturdy footwear and dress for the weather. Please bring binoculars and a bird field guide if you have them. This is taking place on May 7th, 2011 at Tilto Park in Tacoma from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. For more information, visit www.pugetsound.org or email Christina Donhauer at donhower@pugetsound.org. And last on the list is the Northwest Sports Festival. This takes place in Port Gamble, Washington, put on by friends at Olympic Outdoor Center. Look for adventurous, fun weekend full of mountain biking, kayaking, stand-up paddle boarding, and trail running. There are a ton of ways to come out and have a blast, sign up a team, or come compete as an individual. And this is taking place from 9 to 4 p.m. on May 8th in Port Gamble, Washington. And I believe I already said that, but heck, we're doing this live and not editing it. For more information, visit www.outdoorforall.org or call 360-297-4659. That is the news, and now back to the podcast.
Please feel free to send any news, information, and events that focus on environmental consciousness and responsibility, as well as health, happiness, safety, and well-being, to info@healthyhomecast.com. And now, back to Healthy Homecast. Okay, we're back. Thanks a lot for filling us out on that stuff. And we're still looking for somebody to kind of help us coordinate the news stuff. So if anybody wants to help out with that. And I know that Casey has some stuff that's some news events and some upcoming events that he's going to talk about later in the show. And we'll be sure to put those up on the site when this episode gets posted next week. So let's get rolling here with episode 6. First of all, why don't you tell us who you are and what you do?
Thanks, Daryl. Well, my name is Casey Coulombe, and I work for the American Lung Association here in Washington. My technical title is ClearCore Team Coordinator and Supervisor, but I work very closely in conjunction with the Master Home Environmentalist Program at the Lung Association. So I have a bunch of little jobs. One of them, as my title indicates, I supervise a crew of AmeriCorps members. So people who aren't familiar with AmeriCorps, it's similar to the Peace Corps. It's a lot of times I tell people to think of it like the domestic version of the Peace Corps. They don't go overseas, but they do oftentimes move from, you know, the city they grew up in or the city they went to college in to a different location to fulfill their service commitment. So we get a lot of members from out of state. We also focus on trying to recruit members who speak more than one language, so multilingual people. They're given a living stipend for their term of service, which lasts a year. At the end of completion of their term of service, we give them, they're also awarded educational stipend that they can use to pay for continuing education or existing student loans that they may have. So that's kind of the part of that. And what our ClearCore members do is perform a lot of the same things that our Master Home Environmentalist volunteers do, which is going into people's homes and helping them assess their indoor air quality. So we have through this Master Home Environmentalist program, we can go into anyone's home in the city of Seattle and help them assess their indoor air quality. So we ask them a series of questions, and then based on their responses to those questions and our observations in the home, we're able to give them an action plan, typically of 3 to 5 things that they can do in their home to improve their air quality. So we try to target things that that they're concerned with. You know, if they've called us and the concern is about mold or a landlord-tenant issue, then we'll definitely try to address that while we're there. But it's a holistic approach to indoor air quality. So we don't just focus on one issue or one thing. We try to take into account multiple things that could be contributing to any given situation. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. We also train volunteers to perform the in-home assessments. So Daryl, you know, I know that, you know, you took the training about a year ago, and we've got volunteers across the area. So we're able to service not just Seattle, even though that's what our focus is, but through our volunteers, we're able to service the East Side, Bellevue, Kirkland, Redmond area, even to Issaquah, and down south to Burien, where we are tonight. And even up north to Bellingham, where we have a volunteer. So we're trying to spread the news and spread the word. It is a free service available to anyone in Seattle. And like I said, we have some coverage outside of Seattle. We're right in the middle right now of a volunteer training. Those happen twice a year, one time in the spring and then once again in the fall. That's an 11-week course. where we train our volunteers to be comfortable in a lot of different situations, and we give them the tools to approach indoor air quality with a holistic mindset.
Yeah, and as we go through this evening, we'll break down some of that stuff a little bit more. And I do want to say right now that, yes, that's how Casey and I met. And when I took the course last year, and Casey was one of the instructors and the coordinator for that, but I don't know if you're aware of it, but that class was extremely instrumental in us even putting this podcast together.
Oh, great.
So
that's great.
Yeah, yeah. So I can you give me a little bit more clarity on the ClearCorps versus the AmeriCorps thing?
Yeah, so ClearCorps is a division of AmeriCorps. Under the umbrella of AmeriCorps, there are a lot of different programs.
Oh,
there's
okay.
ClearCorps, there's EarthCorps, there's SeniorCorps, there's VetCorps. There's a lot of different things under the umbrella of AmeriCorps. ClearCorps stands for maybe I shouldn't have done that. Community-led education and reduction, CORE. So it had its roots in on the East Coast and in dealing with lead remediation. There's a lot there, especially about 15 years ago. There was a lot of issue with lead pipes, lead paint, and lead in dust and dirt and soil. So ClearCorps was started to address that. Since then, luckily they've kind of realized that, okay, if we're going into people's homes to look at lead, why couldn't we look at these other things that could be contributing to their health? So they've kind of broadened their scope beyond just lead, which is great for the Master Home Environmentalist Program because, we obviously take a broad approach to it. Basically, the federal government funds AmeriCorps, and there's a corporation called the Corporation for National and Community Service, and they basically take the money and distribute it. So they're the ones who give us our little piece of the pie to pay for a percentage of our members' stipends and then for their educational awards. And I believe there's a small amount for some overhead things, like a small amount for a fraction of their computers and things like that.
So you said the ClearCorps part of it's been around for about 15 years, did you say?
ClearCorps, I think, has been around for about 20 years.
How about AmeriCorps? Can you give us a little bit?
I don't know exactly when it started, but I know that Bill Clinton, and during his two administrations, was instrumental in its growth. I know the Peace Corps started way back, in the 60s or 50s, with Kennedy, and I think Bill Clinton was pretty instrumental in raising awareness, if not kind of starting the AmeriCorps.
So that would have been
programs.
What, late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, right around early 90s.
So that's probably right around the beginning of the ClearCorps days, and
right.
Interesting. Yeah, I was in when I was a teenager. I was in the California Conservation Corps.
Oh, okay.
In 1980. So, yeah, well, cool.
Yeah.
And what about, can you give me a little bit of background into the history of the American Lung Association?
Yeah, so we've been around for a while. In Washington, I think, since 1906.
Wow.
One of the longer running nonprofit organizations and health organizations around. I've been at the Lung Association since 2005. I started as a ClearCorps member. At that point, we were not running ClearCorps out of the Lung Association. It was out of the Urban League of Seattle. They would then place members at different nonprofits in different locations around the city. Well, as my term of service was coming to a close, they were transitioning where they were going to house ClearCor, and it just so happened that they were going to start housing it at the American Lung Association, and they needed somebody who kind of knew the program, and they were going to switch the focus from kind of what they had been doing to mainly MHE and the master home environmentalist work that we do with the Lung Association. So it really worked out a nice transition for myself because I was looking for a job, you know, just like this, just basically just like what I'm doing. To address your question, you know, the Lung Association has been around for, you know, over 100 years. The MHE program has only been around since 1992. And it was originally developed by John Roberts, who was known as Dr. Dust. He was a great guy. A lot of knowledge about dust, about vacuums, about asthma, and especially the effects on children. Along with the League of Women Voters, that's where it was developed. And then I think it was the late 90s, I think around 1997 or so, when it kind of transitioned over to being more of a Lung Association program. And we kind of took it over. It's kind of a little brief history of the program and the organization, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's neat. Like I said, I've been involved with it to some degree over the last year, and
right.
I didn't really know that much about it.
Yeah.
I personally was looking to do something different in my life, and I just called the American Lung Association just out of the book, and ended up talking to Eileen. And then I saw her about, I think it was like either 2 or 3 years ago at the one of the green festivals, give one of her amazing talks about, I think it was about indoor air quality or something about cleaning in the home and stuff. And that's when I found out about the program.
Yeah.
So you say you're the team coordinator and the supervisor. Can you give us a little bit more of a idea about exactly what that means and what you do?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm responsible for at least partially responsible for recruiting the members and selecting them. I do that along with the program director, Eileen Gagne. We train them. So I'm involved with very heavily involved in the training of the members. And basically, day-to-day, from a day-to-day point of view, I just make sure that we all understand the goals, we all understand our objectives, and that we're all on task towards achieving those. I work part-time at the Lung Association about 55% time, like about 22 hours a week. So, you know, when I'm there, I'm very busy because there's quite a bit to do. But it's a good busy. You know, part of my job is making sure that the team is running efficiently and there's no, you know, kind of interpersonal conflicts or things going like that going on. Make sure that everybody's, you know, getting along copacetically. Which is, you know, almost never an issue. We have really good teams, which I think is a reflection of, you know, the program and the type of work that we're doing. I mean, that's how we're able to bring in people like yourself as volunteers. That's, you know, what drew me to the program was the fact that we service anyone with a focus on underserved populations. Of all types. So, you know, that was a real big selling point for me as far as wanting to be a part of the program and be a part of the Lung Association and the Master Home Environmentalist program in particular.
Yeah, and it's like the type of thing that they're doing is so powerful. You can't imagine that anybody – I mean, the people that really want to, like, take that on in their life and participate in that are some pretty special people. And, like, there's
right.
– you know, the things that's going on there, it's
– Yeah, I'm always – you know, as I mentioned before, we're just starting our spring volunteer training. And I'm always just pleasantly surprised by the amount of people who are willing to take – you know, Tuesday night, you know, from 6:30 to 9, that's not including, you know, the time it takes to get there and all of that. For 11 weeks, we'll throw in a few Saturday classes.
Like all day on Saturday.
Yeah, too. You know, yeah. Very long Saturday classes. Yeah. And, you know, they're there to learn and they're there to get the knowledge so that they can share it to their family, their friends, their neighbors, their community. And, you know, it's just – it's really rewarding to be a part of that. And, you know, it's also true with our ClearCore members, you know. They're there for the same types of reasons. You know, they want to get into the field. They want to help people. They want to, you know, educate people. So, yeah, it's nice working around people who are, you know, somewhat like-minded.
Yeah, definitely. So you say that you started as a member of the ClearCore team yourself. How did you get involved with that? What kind of training or what was it that inspired you to get involved with that in the first place?
Yeah, well, I knew that I wanted to work, as I said, you know, in some sort of way helping people, and hopefully some helping people who, you know, maybe aren't always the focus in our society, right? The underserved populations. So when I was looking at my options, once I graduated from the University of Oregon with a sociology degree, you know, it was a little difficult, especially moving from there up to here right away. I had a few odd jobs. I had some friends that had been with AmeriCorps, so I kind of knew a little bit about it. And I had some friends that you know, we graduated together and they were doing AmeriCorps, so I heard their stories. And, you know, it sounded interesting, and it sounded like a great way to kind of get your foot in the door. Before I was a ClearCore member and worked at the Lung, and, you know, since been working at the Lung Association, prior to that, I didn't have really any experience in the healthcare field or any experience with public health. But I knew that I wanted to, in some way, at least, even if it was some small way, just give back and try to, you know, help people. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that, I know Eileen's a little bit like, she never initially, she was like in the construction field.
Yeah.
And this wasn't something that she.
Yeah. She's got a very, very diverse background. Yeah. She's got a master's of fine arts. She was a teacher. She was worked on a dude ranch. And yeah, as you mentioned, worked in construction and was a general contractor for a while, owned her own business doing home inspections. And I think that's kind of what brought her into the Master Home Environmentalist program. She started as a volunteer. She took the training, I think back in 98 or 99, took the training and, you know, the rest is history, I guess.
Yeah, and I know that a lot of the – or not a lot, but I know a number of the instructors, like I just finished up that another course that's not necessarily directly connected with yours, the healthy home training for building mm-hmm. professionals. But there's a lot of, you know, there's like a lot of connection with a lot of the trainers and stuff.
Yeah.
And especially in the but a lot of those people in that class, there was like four people in that class that were in my MHE class.
Yeah.
And I think there was one or two of the same instructors. And the one thing that I noticed when I was in the MHE class is that there was a number of the instructors that had actually taken that class themselves, like 5, yeah. 10, 15 years earlier and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a small world and it's kind of circular. You know, we're starting to get in the area a really vibrant community, as you well know, and as your podcast is representative of, you know, the community around these kinds of issues and green building and being environmentally conscious and thinking about the built environment and the type of paint we use and this and that, is really starting to come up and become more and more popular. And I think it can only really benefit us. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, and I, well, I'm getting on to the idea that, you know, you like didn't know this was what you were going to do, but the one thing that you knew that you wanted to do was be of service and mm-hmm. participate and contribute in life. And that's exactly like how I'd always been and then how I got involved with it. And
right.
my business has been transitioning that way. And I don't have any knowledge or background or education and any of this environmental type stuff or health type of stuff. But,
yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's an amazing community of people, and it's quite exciting for myself. I'm going to be 50 this year, and I've been doing this since I was a teenager, a painting contractor, and mm-hmm. the last 3 or 4 years have just been extremely exciting for me.
Yeah, yeah, a lot's changing as awareness grows, and yeah, it's a great thing.
So, So yeah, let's. So what was the catalyst for the MHE program starting, and who exactly started it, and why, and what was the early days of? You say 1992, so it's coming on 19. It's 19 years,
right? Yeah, as I mentioned, John Roberts was the father of the program, and he started it to raise awareness about, you know, these various issues and the things in our homes that could be contributing to our health or poor health. His main focus was, you know, deep dust, the things found in dust, and the importance of vacuuming, and especially all of these effects on children and babies, and basically populations that were vulnerable, but were also unable to really do anything about it, right? They're unable to change their environment. So he focused on, you know, as I mentioned, it was housed at the League of Women Voters, and there was a big focus on mothers and trying to educate mothers about deep dust and the things that can be in dust. But also he realized, you know, then that it was, you needed a holistic approach. So he brought in people to experts in their fields to, you know, help with the program, develop the instruments that we use. So, you know, it was a long process to get to where we are now, with the questionnaire that we use on our in-home visits, to the order of questions that we ask, and the research is constantly changing too. So that's something that is pretty nebulous. You know, we're always looking for the latest research. We want to make sure that we're getting the best information out there to people. So yeah, that's really about the extent of my knowledge of the foundation of the program. I was fortunate enough to meet John Roberts. He passed away, I believe, now about 2.5 years ago. But I was, you know, he was very active in the trainings up until when he passed. Very, very passionate about these issues. And yeah, was just a great guy and a great inspiration, I think, to everybody that was involved with him. You know, not just in the MHE training, but probably throughout his life. So, yeah, he was a great guy.
Yeah, I hear a lot about him. And, you know, the thing about being passionate, it seems like everybody that's involved with that program and that gets involved with it is just really, really passionate. It's really cool. And
yeah.
And the instructors and stuff that are involved with it. Now, I certainly don't know about even 2.5 years ago, but I certainly don't know about 19 years ago. But the instructors that I know about now, it's – They're just so incredible that I'm, like, blown away. Every time I left a class, I was like, man, these people are, like, they know their stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I mean, that's what we strive for. We want to bring in presenters and educators that are, you know, at the top of their field, you know, and you know, the best people around the area. And fortunately for us, we've got a lot of people that are not only – you know, the most knowledgeable in the area, but some that are leading their field, you know, in the country and in some cases, you know, the planet. So it's good to be associated with those people, and it's great that they share our vision. with the program. And I mean, I'm just fortunate to be a part of it, really. I'm glad that I'm there and able to, you know, in some way be a part of it. You know, you mentioned the great presenters and trainers that we bring in. I know you're going to have some. I think Stephen Gilbert either has been or will be on one of your podcasts, and you know, so we get a lot of great people to come in for us. Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing I really, I mean, I just, and yeah, thank you. I mean, you're great too. And I knew that, like, when I was going to do this podcast, that I knew that, you know, I definitely, you know, there's other people involved in this, certainly Eileen and stuff, but I just knew that, you know, that you would be great for this. And I really love the variety, like the environmental justice and the tenant rights and the, you know, there's people like, lawn and garden experts and stuff, and then like household chemicals, and then there was the asthma, and it's really and then we're going to talk about here in a little bit about how people get involved with it. So how many volunteers? So you have a class going on right now, approximately how many?
We've got about a dozen in the class, and you know, in a typical class, as I mentioned, we have two a year, and one in the spring and one in the fall. We'll have anywhere from 12 to 20 or 25, I think, was our biggest class since I've been there. And, the, you know, our typical class is, you know, probably in the mid to high teens. But we try to keep it around that size, one, because of our space, but really because it's we want to make sure that the volunteers have a chance to interact with the trainers and interact with each other and ask questions, and we want to make sure that you know, the training that we are doing is as efficient as it can be.
I know you brought up earlier, and I know that let's talk a little bit about I hadn't heard the H word come up yet. Do you know what the H word is?
What's that?
The heels.
Heels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
let's talk a little bit about what you mentioned some of the stuff about it, but let's talk about what the heel is and why, and then I have some questions around that.
Yeah, sure. So the HEAL stands for Home Environmental Assessment List, and that's our little cute acronym for what we do when we go into people's homes. So the HEAL itself is the list of questions, basically, that we ask the resident that we're visiting. So we ask them a lot of things, from everything from, you know, have they seen any visible mold? You know, what is the daytime temperature they usually keep their thermostat set at? Have they noticed, you know, condensation on the windows when cooking? Things like that that would be geared towards identifying mold and moisture problems, to things like, you know, how long have you lived in the home? Has there been construction or remodeling? Is there flaking or peeling paint on the interior or exterior? You know, looking at the structure. And, you know, so it's really holistic, the types of questions that we ask. There's quite a bit. The actual assessment itself in someone's home takes about an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on the size of the home, and really, quite honestly, how talkative and inquisitive the resident is. But basically, our ClearCore members and our volunteers, and myself and Eileen, we all do visits. We'll basically go into someone's home and just kind of try to get a sense from them what their issues are, the types of things they want to change, get a sense from them what they're willing to change, maybe what they're not willing to compromise or change on, and then kind of based on that and our perceptions and their answers to the questions, we develop an action plan specific to their situation. So we want to make sure that we're, you know, addressing their fundamental reason why they wanted us to come into their home to look around. And we also want to talk to them about maybe some other things that they hadn't considered that they could do, or some other things that are possible issues, and then talk to them about, you know, potential things that they could do to address those issues. Most of our recommendations are things that you can implement for free or very low cost. So, you know, a typical suggestion would be like taking your shoes off at the front door. That's probably the number one thing people can do to reduce their exposure to pollutants and stuff in their home. There's a lot of stuff contained in dust that can be bad for us, not just lead, but also pesticides and other chemicals. So the more of that we can leave outside our home, the better. We spend, you know, about 90% of our time indoors, and it's really indoors that we have the most measure of control. So, you know, something like taking your shoes off at the front door, having a high-quality walk-off mat, and vacuuming more regularly, just doing those three things alone is really going to reduce your exposure, certainly to a lot of the things that are in dust. So, you know, that's one of the things that we might discuss. We also talk to people about, like, if they themselves or their children have asthma. We're there to talk to them about maybe possible triggers and how to reduce those triggers with them. We also are able to talk to them about their rights as tenants and the things that their landlord is required to do for them in their units. Things like code violations and things like that we're able to talk to people about. And through our ClearCore members, we're actually able to work in conjunction with landlords and tenants to try to come to solutions that help everybody and make everybody happy and healthy. So, you know, if anyone, that's kind of another aspect of the in-home visits that we do, where we can gear them to, if people call and live in Seattle that have landlord-tenant issues or questions or concerns, we're able to send our ClearCore members out there to help them deal with those. So yeah, you know, we kind of also tailor it a little bit to the resident. If we go and the resident says, you know, I only have an hour to do this, I'm sorry, I didn't realize it might take longer. You know, we'll try to just hit the high points and give them as much information in that hour as we can to try to help them. If we go to someone's home and they say, for instance, well, you know, it's the mold that I'm most worried about, and they don't want to discuss some of the other issues, well, that's okay too. Or, you know, if we go to someone's home and they say, well, I don't want to go upstairs, we don't need to go upstairs, well, we're not going to force anybody to let us upstairs. So, you know, we're there to you know, try to help out in any ways as we can, as much as we can. You know, and it's not a white glove test. We're not trying to go into people's homes and condemn their behaviors or the types of things they're doing, or to, you know, somehow pass judgment on them in any way. We're very non-judgmental. We're there to help. We're there to facilitate to hopefully facilitate the change in the resident. So, you know, we're really geared toward trying to find solutions that best fit the resident. I mean, we're not going to go into someone's home who rents and suggest that they rip up their carpeting and replace the windows, because that's not up to them probably. But we would, you know, potentially be able to talk to them about what they could do to limit their exposure with the carpeting they had, and you know, maybe talk to the landlord and work out something to get windows replaced or whatever. So, you know, we're there to work for the resident in whatever capacity, really, that not whatever capacity. We won't do cleaning, and we won't change your furnace filters or any of the physical stuff, but we're definitely there to offer advice and information.
Yeah, and I know it's really important. You brought up in the beginning, you know, how you really were committed to doing something for people that were underserved and and people that, you know, the one thing I know is about, I mean, I'm not, you know, terribly affluent, but I've had a relatively decent life. But, you know, a lot of this stuff is, it's not such common knowledge. And I think a real important thing about this program is it, you know, when I go out and do these assessments or have done them myself, it's amazing something so simple that you would tell someone, they're like, oh my goodness, I never even thought about it. But it really isn't like rocket science or anything.
Yeah.
And another thing that you had mentioned earlier on that I think is important about this is the fact that that there's people that are you look for people that are multicultural and multilingual.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the you know, underserved communities and the underserved people.
Exactly. That's exactly why we try to bring on people who are multilingual. Right now we have two members who speak English and Spanish, and we have one member who speaks English and Chinese. So it's a big advantage for us when we're able to say to clinics or, you know, community centers or people who are interested that, yes, we can go out, we can send people out to Spanish-speaking homes. We don't need translators when we do presentations and things to the community centers or clinics where, you know, English is not the language spoken. So it's a huge thing. To your point on, you know, things that maybe, you know, when we go into homes and people are surprised by, you know, oh, I never knew that was bad for me or whatever. I mean, there's things like that all the time. And I think that that's why the education is so important because, you know, you can tell you – in my opinion, you know, you can tell a smoker smoking's bad for you. Well, I think by now most people know that smoking's not good for them. You know, so the, at least the knowledge is there. People who are smoking, unless, you know, you're young or whatever, you know, underage or whatever, for the most part, people who smoke realize the health risks involved with that. Well, somebody that's using, you know, all these household cleaners and maybe mixing them or using a lot of bleach or what have you, they might not know that that's a potential health risk. You know, one thing that comes to mind right off the bat is the ionic breeze air filters. They produce ozone. Well, so people buy them thinking that they're going to, you know, improve their lung health when in fact, you know, the ozone that they produce can really damage his lung tissue. So I think a lot of it is just education, and it's encouraging when you can talk to people about this. And like you said, you know, their eyes light up or they're like, oh, I never knew about that. I'm glad you mentioned this. You know, what's even more rewarding is when, you know, we do follow-up calls for all of the in-home visits that we do. Usually after about 2 weeks, we call back and contact the resident to see if they've made any behavior changes, to see if they have any further questions or concerns, and just to kind of check in with them. And, you know, there's nothing more rewarding than talking to a resident and they say, yeah, you know, since I've implemented the changes you suggested, you know, my son, his asthma attacks have been cut in half, or, you know, he's not waking up congested like he was before, or, you know, whatever. So, you know, to the point, I think that education is so important, you know, with that. So,
how are we doing with the time?
Great time for a break.
Hey, we just got the thumbs up from the producer. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back with more. We could go on for hours about this stuff. I've got tons of good questions and, well, I guess you'll be the judge of that, the listener, but we'll be right back.
You are listening to Healthy Homecast.
Gravity connects me to the earth, which connects me. me to people who connect me to myself more honestly. And gravity connects me to the crust, which connects to the leaves on the trees that make it possible to breathe. That we don't know how we feel or how to connect with other people on the planet. Oh, if we only knew the power in each blue disillusioned little.
Okay, and we're back. And once again, thanks for tuning in to Healthy Homecast. This is episode 6. And we've got Casey Coulomb from ClearCore and the American Lung Association. Talking about the Master Home Environmentalist program. And, I think we've been talking about some other stuff and got a few more things. Let's get picked back up where we left off. I had a few things here. So how many of these in-home assessments have been done, or how many of these approximately are going on?
Yeah, so we do... This year we're on pace at least to do over 200 of these visits in the city of Seattle, which to me is a huge number. When I started, we were definitely not doing that many. Our capacity's grown really since almost every year since I've been there. We've done more and more. So to do almost 200 or 200 plus to visit that many families in the city of Seattle in 1 year, to me, is huge. It's a great thing. As we've brought in more and more ClearCore members, and as we're, now better able to train them, to perform these heals and to do presentations and health fairs and other events, they're able to do more and more, which is great. As we, continue to train and bring in new volunteers, they're always, very energetic and willing to go out and do, more and more of these visits in their community. So, it's a great thing. We do, as I said, the city has asked us to do 175 visits this year in the city of Seattle. So we'll do at least that many. Probably about, we'll do at least 50, I'd say, outside of Seattle, 50 minimum. As I said, it's kind of gone up incrementally every year that I've been a part of that, and I think that's kind of been the general theme.
So what are the general circumstances in which would have somebody having one of these assessments done, and then how does someone actually go about getting to have one of these assessments done in their home?
Yeah, sure. So, basically the reasons that people have for getting the assessment are really varied. I mean, it's everything from just curiosity about indoor air quality and the things that they can do to, very specific concerns, there's mold growing in my bathroom. I mean, mold is probably our number one inquiry. More people call us about mold than probably anything else, maybe everything else combined. But we get a lot of questions about mold. And, we live in a damp environment here in the Northwest. There's a lot of people dealing with mold. So, that's kind of one of our big focuses. But all sorts of things, landlord-tenant issues as relating to indoor air quality, a lot of it's just general concern for the health of either themselves or their family. That's really what it boils down to. A lot of parents want to make sure that their homes are safe for their family and their children and their spouses. So that's kind of the number one reason, as far as how people would sign up, they can definitely call us at 206-441-5100. My extension is 21. And basically, we just take some information from them, and it goes into our database. And then when there's a volunteer or one of our members is available to do the in-home visit, they'll contact the resident and schedule that appointment. So they can call us. They can also visit our website, which is www.alaw.org/MHE. And that'll take them to our MHE page, where they can find out more information about the HEAL and the in-home visit, and also fill out a form and sign up for the in-home visit. Again, our focus there is on the city of Seattle. We do, as I mentioned, have some volunteers around the area, but really it's for people that live in Seattle or the very near surrounding area. And then also at health fairs, we sign people up for the in-home assessment at different health fairs and community events that we go to throughout the year. So,
yeah, and we'll have we'll probably repeat that information, the contact information, at the very end, but we'll certainly have it on our website posted with the episode. So are there any statistics on actually how effective these HEALs are, these home assessments?
Yeah. There have been some studies. There was a study done by the University of Washington that kind of looked into the effectiveness and behavioral changes associated with our visits. I can tell you right now that we do, over 80% of the visits we do, the people respond with a behavioral change. So that's a huge number. Mm. We feel that, even something as simple as taking your shoes off, it might sound simple, but it's actually a little bit harder to implement. But once you start and once you get accustomed to doing that, it just becomes second nature. So even something like that is we consider a behavior change, and it can be very significant. What that can do to your indoor air quality as far as an improvement. There have been studies done as to the effectiveness of the program and the visits. A lot of those, at least the ones I'm aware of, were done in 2000. I believe it was 2004. So it's been a while since something like that has been done. I think it's always good to kind of revisit those types of issues because, as we learned, this past year, just because you've proven effectiveness before doesn't necessarily mean that everybody sees it that same way. Doesn't necessarily mean that your funding is going to come from the same sources. Doesn't mean just because, we have a great program and we're helping a lot of people doesn't secure our future. Yeah, I mean it's good to know that it's good to know, Daryl, that there's people like you out there helping us spread the word with things like this podcast.
Yeah, well, it's a real it's just a real honor to be able to do this. I mean, it's kind of like I don't think I have much of a choice. Once I went through that class, I figured I was pretty much initiated and responsible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what are some of the general, speaking of myself and the class and stuff, what are some of the general reasons that someone would do so and, getting involved, and how does someone actually get involved in becoming a volunteer and be doing the training and starting to become somebody that can actually go out and do these assessments?
Right. Yeah, so, really – The reasons that someone the reasons in the past that our volunteers have expressed interest in being part of the program is as varied as probably why the people want the in-home visits.
Sure.
A lot of times it is they want to get more knowledge so that they can help their friends and family and community live better lives. A lot of times it's a personal thing that's happened, either they have asthma or some sort of lung disease or, a close family member has, lung cancer or something like that. But a lot of times I think it is a kind of an altruistic attitude. that a lot of our volunteers have, and that's what we want. We want volunteers who want to be a part of the program in order to help other people, because that's the crux of the whole program, is to get out there and to go to the homes of the people that need our help. And so I think that's, you know, I think that's what motivates, you know, most of our volunteers. So yeah, I think that, you know, I can only guess about, you know, specific motivations, but I think it's kind of universal. We all share, or, you know, our volunteers and our staff kind of all share a desire to, as I mentioned earlier, to kind of help out other people. So if there are people out there that want to be involved with the program and want to volunteer and become a Master Home Environmentalist volunteer, as I mentioned, we have two trainings a year. Typically they meet on Tuesday evenings for 11 weeks. So if someone's interested in applying, they can call me again, 206-441-5100, extension 21. And they can also visit our website, www.alaw.org/MHE. And there's information on there about the training and any the upcoming training that we would have would be listed on there. So if people are interested, that's the best thing to do. Go to our website. There you can fill out an application. Once I receive the applications online, I contact everyone and I let them know that I received the application, and then we go through kind of a screening process. We bring everyone in for short, informal group interviews. We want to make sure that everybody's ideas of what the training is like and what we expect from our volunteers, everybody's expectations, we want to make sure are on the same plane there, so that nobody's surprised by anything that happens with the training or with our expectations of our volunteers. And yeah, you know, we've got a great volunteer base. Our volunteers are kind of like the backbone of the program. Very important to the work that we do. So we're always looking for more.
Great. There was a couple of things before we started rolling the podcast here. There was a couple of things that we wanted to touch on. One is there was something in specifically that you wanted to talk about regarding the funding.
Yeah. You know, I just wanted to mention that the vast majority of our funding comes from a grant from the city of Seattle. And this past year, that funding was in serious jeopardy, and we almost lost our funding for this year, 2011. So that's going to be a fight that it looks like we're probably going to have to wage every year, for every new budget. So, you know, it even got to the point last year where we went to almost all of the open forum city council meetings to express to the council members that were there just how important the Master Home Environmentalist program was to the city, and how important it is to the people that we serve. There's really nothing in Seattle anywhere close to what we do. There's no other organization, there's no other city workers doing the type of stuff that we do. So it's extremely important. So, you know, again, if there are people out there that feel the same way, please contact, and you, especially if you live in Seattle, please contact your council person and just express to them, you know, how important you feel this program to be. Because we sure do, and you know, it's scary when something like that happens, because you know, it'd be a shame if a program like this that has been around for so long, since you know 1992, and has been proven to improve people's lives, it'd be a shame to have something like this free service for people go away, because it really. The amount of money that it costs to run this program is a drop in the bucket compared to the hospital visits and medications and other things that people would have to use if this service wasn't around. I mean, I know for sure that we've not only helped save people money, but, you know, helped their health too. So,
yeah, the lack of information can be could be the cost could go through the roof.
Right.
And another thing is that was there any particular awards or accolades
yes.
About the program that you wanted to share? I know you had something.
Yeah. Thanks for mentioning that. So just recently, the program director, Eileen Gagne, was nominated. Eileen Gagne, the program director for the Master Home Environmentalist Program. She's also the Washington Lung and Environmental Health Program Coordinator for the Lung Association. Well, in collaboration with the National Public Health Week, the Washington State Public Health Association awarded Eileen a Health Champion Award, which is great. It's great Woo-hoo. News. Yeah.
She is a champion, too.
She really is. She does a lot of work. She does a lot of trainings. She's involved with she's involved with the local building community and the whole kind of green building movement. As well as, you know, a lot of different organizations that she works with through the Lung Association, just raising awareness and getting the word out about the program. And then, as I mentioned, she's a master trainer for the program. She goes around the country training people how to implement the MHE program in their own areas. So, yeah, she does a lot of work, and it's great to see her recognized for that.
She's definitely an advocate of the general welfare and the well-being of just everybody.
Yeah.
She's just an amazing person.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of stuff that we're going to skip over because we're getting kind of close to the end here, but there's a few things that we'd like to ask, our generic questions that we like to ask people.
Well, one more thing I'd like to add,
please,
if that's all right.
Please do.
We have our annual lung walk coming up May 1st, and it maybe people are listening to this after May 1st. That's all right. We have it every year.
No, this will be up before May 1st.
Okay, great.
Oh, yeah, this will be up next week.
Great. Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking of those people.
And it'll
people,
be on the site, too.
There's people that are going to keep coming back and wanting to listen to this one podcast over and over, so it might be after May 1st.
And there's going to be another one next year.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll so we have a lung walk every year. This year it's on May 1st. So if you're interested, contact the Lung Association and we can go ahead and get you signed up for that. It's a great event every year. There's also going to be a 5K run this year. So it's a great fundraiser. So if people are wondering about ways to give back or ways that they can help out, the Lung Walk's a great way to do that.
So. Great. So this is the Healthy Home Cast. So our big question is, what does a healthy home mean to you?
Healthy home. I think a healthy home is, you know, free from toxins, free from anything that's going to make you sick, you know, either acutely or over the course of, you know, your lifetime. I mean, what else could it mean? You know, I mean, I think that a healthy home means an area that's safe for the people that are there inhabiting it. A healthy home is a place where you don't have to worry about, you know, pollution and all the things that might be outside, or you worry less. You don't have to worry about them affecting your health, you know, in your healthy home. You know, it's everything from the way the home's built to the location of the home, to what you bring into the home, you know. So, yeah, just like our approach with MHE, it's a holistic thing, you know. So, and I, you know, furthermore, I feel that everybody has a right to that, you know. Everybody has a right to live a healthy life, and everybody has a right to a healthy place to live that life.
I can't agree more. Let's see. Outside of those that you're directly associated to through your work, are there any particular groups or organizations that you support or are affiliated with that you'd like to share?
Let's see. You know, no real trade organizations or anything like that. I'm in a few bands. I love to play music. I've been involved with the Washington Trails Association as a volunteer in the past. I think that they're a great organization. That's about all.
Great. So in general, what helpful hints or wise advice do you have to share with anybody that has significant meaning to you?
Wow.
bit of life zen, yeah, from right. Casey.
Yeah, seriously. Wow, I wasn't expecting that one. I mean, I think to take it maybe a little bit away from the indoor air quality.
Oh, that's
thing,
perfect.
I mean, there's things I could say about that, but I just think that, you know, it's nothing new. I mean, it's like what Gandhi said, just be the change you want to be. I mean, if you want, you know, the world to be a healthier place, maybe consider the things that you're doing individually that could bring that about. You know, everything from how often you drive a car to, you know, the type of food you buy, and maybe even where you buy it. But yeah, I think that just to you know, be the change that you want to be, without being too pushy.
There you go. Yeah, that's thank you. That's you know, one of the things that when we set out to do this podcast, that we wanted to be able to educate and inspire people, but without trying to make people feel like they're wrong or bad about something
right.
that they may or may not be doing. I think that's what you're trying to that's what I get from the pushy thing.
Yeah.
Great. Let's see. So we talked about the walk that's coming up, and you mentioned something up. Are there any other upcoming events or info that you'd like to offer?
Well, we have the long run walk coming up May 1st. There are also other events that the Lung Association does as fundraisers. We have something called the Trek Tri-Island, which is a 3-day bicycle trip around the San Juan Islands here in Washington. And I was fortunate enough to be able to volunteer on that last year, and it was great. It was a lot of fun. I was able to ride around and help people fix their bikes and do mechanical work on bikes, and that was great. And it was a great experience, and you know, I saw firsthand how much fun the participants have. So that's one of our great fundraisers for people who love to ride bikes. We also have a Climb for Clean Air, which is a climb up Mount Rainier, which is a little more serious than the than the 3-day ride around the San Juans. There's more training. It's a higher level of fundraising, and a higher kind of general fitness level. But again, a great event. The people who summit and the people that hike up there and climb it, you know, always have great stories. So there's that. And then we also have a Ride Across America, which is a fully supported bike ride across America, and they're leaving. I think in June or July, I believe it's June. But yeah, there's more information about all these events on our website, or people can contact me and I will definitely make sure that they get the information. And then, as I said, we'll have another, Master Home Environmentalist volunteer training, starting in the fall. So typically that starts, sometime mid September. Is when we'll be starting that. So if people are interested in that, they should submit their application no later than probably mid-August. And yeah, that's about all I can think of as far as upcoming events. Just, you know, one more thing to say, in terms of our ClearCorps members, as I mentioned, it's a year-long commitment for our ClearCorps members, and each December we look for replacements. So if anybody's interested in the ClearCorps program or would like to learn more about that, they can always contact me.
Yeah, and we'll have Casey's direct information like right on the episode on the site. Two more questions. So the we're living in the era of social media. Right. So what particular website or phone number or Facebook or Twitter or blog or whatever is it that you want to have people check out?
Oh, you know what? I'm probably one of the last people that would know about stuff like that. I'm really not involved too much with the social media and those things that you mentioned. MHE does have a Facebook page. We're trying to experiment with how to use that and how to use the different social media. We've even considered, you know, like the Twitter thing. So
it's a lot of work.
Yeah. You know, we're finding that out, but we're also, you know, I also want to make sure that we use it to the best, the best way we can, you know, and I want to make sure that it's not redundant to something else that we already have. But we do have a Facebook page and, you know, we're always looking for ways to improve that. But, you know, as far as websites, Steve Gilbert's thing, Toxopedia is great. I love that one. You know, there's a bunch of good local ones. Denise has a pretty good website. I don't know if you've checked that one out.
She's going to be on the show.
Yeah.
And Steve as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Casey, for really appreciate you coming down. And our last question, is there any last words, anything that you feel was left out?
Oh, I think we were able to talk about a lot of the stuff that we do there at the Lung Association and most of the stuff that we do with the Master Home Environmentalist Program. So, no, there's nothing else that I want to add other than thanks a lot for inviting me to do this. And thanks so much for the work that you do as a volunteer for us.
Well, you're quite welcome. And so, everybody, thanks for listening. This has been episode 6 of Healthy Homecast. And on behalf of Casey Coulomb, Tony Freiss, and Daryl Whalen, we say have a great night, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to Healthy Homecast, brought to you by HealthyPainting.com. Please feel free to contact us with any comments, questions, or suggestions for upcoming show topics or guests. Call us at 206-650-4587 or send a direct email to info@healthyhomecast.com. Be sure to check back. New episodes coming soon.
Desert low.